topic that I was wanting to discuss this evening is this theme I mentioned earlier. I'm going to be going from here to a place that's even colder than Houston. Today, during the noon time, it was -2 Fahrenheit in Chicago. When I left to come out here, it was like -8 Fahrenheit in Chicago going down. That's where I'm going. Wish me luck. But I'm really looking forward to going there for another reason, not for the cold, but amongst the youth group, I'll be conducting a seminar on self-honesty. So I wanted to just do a little bit of what we're going to be doing connected with that, because my thoughts are absorbed in it. It's a nice topic, put very simply. One cannot progress in spiritual life without honesty, and self-honesty is the beginning of honesty. Self-delusion is the way of this world, and self-honesty is the way of spiritual life. So I'm just going to, I was thinking to take two things, some reference on this topic from Srimad Bhagavatam, and some reference also from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur on an essay or a paper that he wrote on Brahmana and Vaishnava. It's a little bit on the theme of the Mahabharata discussion from Friday, where Mahabharata is presenting largely, substantially, most substantially, the theme of ethics, proper duty, what is it that one is supposed to do, good versus evil. If you do good, you're protected by the Supreme. If you do evil, it may look like there's some advantage, but you're destroyed by that very act of evil and the reaction for that. So the Srimad Bhagavatam takes that principle and elevates it to a whole other transcendental level, not just ethics, but taking full shelter unto the Supreme, and that's the highest ethic. And when you have that highest ethic, you have all other ethics, like the Swarup Lakshana, the Tatastha Lakshana idea we discussed. So now this is on the topic of honesty. That's one of the qualities of goodness. It's one of the virtues of life. And then elevate that to the platform of complete dependence upon Krishna. And you get real self-honesty, transcendental self-honesty. With that transcendental self-realization and transcendental God-realization, and you get transcendental life, a life of transcendence, not just a life of goodness. Because when you have a life of transcendence and when your consciousness is fixed upon the Supreme, that's where you go. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam chadyatante kalevaram. So we want goodness in our lives as devotees, but the support of that goodness, or the way for that to become possible and sustained, infallibly sustained, even in trying circumstances of life, is where there's full shelter in Krishna. So that's the self-honesty that I'm going to try to spend time with the youth group in Chicago on, and a little bit of time here. There's a verse, Canto 2, chapter 9, text number 4. notably chapter 9 of Canto 2 is where the Chaturshloki verses of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam are found, starting with text 30. So this is earlier in that chapter. This is a preparation or prelude to those Chaturshloki verses. And it's describing, the verse that I'm going to read is describing Lord Brahma, who had this realization of the personality of Godhead, where the Lord then delivered the Chaturshloki verses. But what was Brahma's qualification to have that delivered to him and then to realize it in fullness? So he had that kind of devotion that his penances were nirvilika, is the word that's used, non-deceptive penances. So here's the verse and purport. Atma-tattva vishudhartam yad aha bhagavan ritam brahmane darshayan rupam avyalika vratadritaha. His vrata, his vow, was avyalika or nirvyalika, without deception, non-deceptive penance, Prabhupada has translated. O king, this is Shukadeva Goswami speaking to Maharaj Pariksit. The personality of Godhead, being very much pleased with Lord Brahma because of his non-deceptive penance in bhakti yoga, presented his eternal and transcendental form before Brahma. And that is the objective goal for purifying the conditioned soul. Purport. Atma-tattva is the science of both God and the living entity. Both the Supreme Lord and the living entity are known as Atma. The Supreme Lord is called Paramatma, and the living entity is called the Atma. The Brahma, or the Jiva. So it's Parabrahma and Brahma. Atma, Paramatma. Both the Paramatma and the Jivatma, being transcendental to the material energy, are called Atma. So Shukadeva Goswami explains this verse with the aim of purifying the truth of both the Paramatma and the Jivatma. Generally, people have many wrong conceptions about both of them. The wrong conception of the Jivatma is to identify the material body with the pure soul. And the wrong conception of Paramatma is to think him on an equal level with the living entity. But both misconceptions can be removed by one stroke of bhakti yoga. Just as in the sunlight, both the sun and the world and everything within the sunlight are properly seen. In the darkness, one cannot see the sun, nor himself, nor the world. But in the sunlight, one can see the sun himself and the world around him. Srila Shukadeva Goswami therefore says that for purification of both wrong conceptions, the Lord presented his eternal form before Brahmaji, being fully satisfied by Brahma's non-deceptive vow of discharging bhakti yoga. Except for bhakti yoga, any other method for realization of atma tattva or the science of atma will prove deceptive in the long run. So his non-deceptive vow led to a non-deceptive conception or eradication of misconception. One led to the other. Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that only by bhakti yoga can one know Him perfectly, and then one can enter into the science of God. Brahmaji underwent great penance in performing bhakti yoga, and thus he was able to see the transcendental form of the Lord. His transcendental form is 100% spiritual, and one can see Him only by spiritualized vision after proper discharge of tapasya, or penance, in pure bhakti yoga. The form of the Lord manifested before Brahma is not one of the forms with which we have experienced in this material world. Brahmaji did not perform such severe types of penance just to see a form of material production. Therefore, the question by Maharaj Parikshit about the form of the Lord is answered. That was earlier. The form of the Lord is Satchidananda, or eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. But the material forms of the living being is neither eternal nor full of knowledge nor blissful. That is the distinction between the form of the Lord and that of the conditioned soul. The conditioned soul, however, can regain his form of eternal knowledge and bliss simply by seeing the Lord by means of bhakti yoga. The summary is, last paragraph, that due to ignorance, the conditioned soul is encaged in the temporary varieties of material forms, but the Supreme Lord has no such temporary form like the conditioned souls. He is always possessed of an eternal form of knowledge and bliss, and that is the difference between the Lord and the living entity. One can understand this difference by the process of bhakti yoga. Brahma was then told by the Lord the gist of Srimad Bhagavatam in 4 original verses, coming up in this chapter. Thus, Srimad Bhagavatam is not the creation of the mental speculators. The sound of Srimad Bhagavatam is transcendental, and the resonance of Srimad Bhagavatam is good as that of the Vedas. One commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he comments that the goal of devotional service, just as is Prabhupada stated here, is to see the Supreme Lord. You can say it in other ways. The goal is to develop our love for the Supreme Lord, but the consequence of developing our love for the Supreme Lord is we know Him and we see Him. He discloses Himself to one who has that quality. And it's not an imaginative thing. One imagines it's a consequence of this having no other purpose. Go to this word. The process within Srimad Bhagavatam, it's not only describing the goal, but also the means to reach the goal. And the means to reach the goal is unalloyed devotional service. So this avyalika bhakti, devotional service that's non-deceptive, or avyalika tapa, or vrata, the vows. So we're all following the process of trying to reach the personality of Godhead through devotional service, and we're at different stages or different positions in that path, trajectory towards Krishna. The emphasis that I wanted to make in this, from the verse and from this little seminar, is, are we very clear? How clear are we about what the real objective is? And Prabhupada often taught, and it resonated goal very clearly, then it's very easy to identify the steps to reach the goal and take the steps to reach the goal. But if you don't have a very clear idea of goal, then it's very difficult to get there. So I just spent some time. What's the goal? It's this darshan of Krishna, or being in the presence of Krishna, or developing a love for Krishna. And then that mood of love for Krishna, to serve Krishna and in his direct presence. There's so many other benefits that can be derived. One devotee was sharing with me, they attended the Brajmandal Parikrama whole way, the whole month, just going with the devotees all around the places of Braja. And I asked, wow, what was that like? What did you take back with you from that? Was there some deep feeling for the original home? So this is not our original home, it's not our real home, that's our real home, with Krishna is our real home. And then they said, and something that I'm finding now that I'm away from home is the stresses of work and everyday life, it's just not affecting me at all. That resonance with transcendence is manifesting in that manner. stress management. But the best stress management is not having any. I've taught at a little seminar in some corporate places, and that's where I start with them. Best stress management is not have any. And that's called Vaikuntha. No anxiety. But supposing you're not in Vaikuntha, you're in Kunta. You're in this place of Kunta, Kunta Loka. So you can best manage it if you're connected with Vaikuntha. Your consciousness is connected. So that's the objective. Now, it's very easy to have a wrong objective if you have the wrong conception. If consciousness is covered by material conception. How do you get free from material conception? What we just heard in the purport, Prabhupada was explaining, is those material conceptions are removed when you see the Lord. So it's like, when that happens, the conceptions are gone, then how can you strive to reach the goal if you don't have the right conception? The catch-22 thing. This comes first, that comes first. So the purpose, what Krishna, my point is this, what Krishna reciprocates with is our sincere desire. It's like Gajendra. In Gajendra Moksha, when he was offering the prayers that he had been offering when he was King Indradumna, and then he was cursed to become an elephant. So now he's an elephant and he's caught by his leg by a crocodile, and he's fighting for 100 years and he's losing the battle, and he's realizing it's over. I'm going to lose and he's going to win. That means that I'm finished. Death. So as he was in that state of facing death, he became, his consciousness went to another position. The consciousness was calling out to the Supreme Lord. And because of his previous life as a great saintly personality, He remembered those very prayers, and as he was reciting those very prayers, he was calling to the Supreme. In the commentary, Prabhupada explains, he didn't even call the Supreme by name. But Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, they knew it. It's not meant for me, because of his sincerity. So Lord Vishnu came on the strength of his sincerity. In other words, his realization hadn't evolved, but his sincerity did. The circumstance forced the sincerity. And so Lord Vishnu came. And in the course of his prayers, he was praying, please protect me. But then, in the course of realization of the Lord's position, that standard prayer became a spontaneous prayer, where he said, essentially, I know that because I'm your devotee, you'll protect me. I don't need to ask for your protection. So, let me pray for this. When you release me from this difficult circumstance, let me pray to remain fixed in your devotional service. That's this nirvyalika, where it's not mixed with something that's limited and temporary, or something that's not really in our real self-interest. Just to get out of a difficult circumstance is temporary. The temporary is not who we are. It's not a proper self-conception. So this self-honesty rests upon a very core principle. That's our sincerity, or now going to refer briefly to this little essay that Bhaktisiddhanta wrote on Brahmanism and Vaishnavism, where by reference to some Upanishadic statements, Chandogya Upanishad and another Upanishad and Vanaparva of Mahabharata, he's going to establish through scriptural authority that this very basic quality of uses sincerity of purpose, which is this nirvyalika message, non-deceptive penance, not like, so I do something because I want something. This gets me that. So it's not an act of simply connecting with the Supreme. It's, you know, I'm at the center and you're convenient for me. You give me something I want. So it's a bartering deal or a business deal, not simply an act of service unto the Supreme. Mixed. So another term is sincerity. Another term that he uses is simplicity. I'd like to briefly read these quotes from Mahabharata, Vanaparva. Here's Bhaktisiddhanta's comment about this. Mahabharata Vanaparva has established that simplicity is the only identification of a brahmana. That he takes this term simplicity and makes it equal to self-honesty and sincerely wanting to be truthful. Therefore, we find that by the influence of this extraordinary quality, simplicity, the ideals of simplicity are found in scriptures that are written by brahmanas. Neutrality is the ornament of the simple-minded brahmanas. So neutrality, nisojati, nikangsati, is, you know, the state of not hankering for something that is temporary, or lamenting for the loss of something that's temporary. It's not identifying in this temporal realm, in the realm. justification goes elsewhere, to the soul. A Brahmana proves his simplicity by opening his heart and speaking the truth, even if it hampers his own self-interest. Prabhupada gave this example. The quality of a Brahmana is truthfulness. He said, even if an enemy comes to his door and says, my dear sir, where is your treasury? He will say, it is there. That's the Brahmana. Or the classic example that also Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur points to is the Chandogya Upanishad of Satyakama and Gautama Rishi. So it almost sounds Puranic, and Chandogya Upanishad, amongst the 108 Upanishads, it's considered to be one of the purest and most elevated. In other words, amongst those who are smartas, they value Chandogya Upanishad very much. So here's the Chandogya Upanishad narration. Once there was a young man named Satyakama, the son of Jabala, and he approached Gautama Rishi and requested Gautama Rishi with sincere appeal, please accept me as your student. Gautama Rishi said, very well. What is your gotra? And he said, I don't know. So Gautama said, go ask your mother. What is your gotra? So he went to his mother and said, I was asked by Gautama Rishi to find out what is my gotra. Can you tell me? He sent me to speak to you. She said, I don't know. When I was young, I was a maid servant and I was with so many men, I don't even know who your father is. So I can't say. What is your gotra? But you can tell Gautama Rishi that your name is Satyakama Jabala. Very well. So he went and, just as his mother had described, he told Gautama Rishi, I don't know what is my gotra, because my mother doesn't even know who my father is. But she said to say, my name is Satyakama Jabala. So Gautama Rishi said, very well, I accept you as my disciple, because you're truthful. And only one who is a Brahmana could be truthful like this. So your first service is you go gather wood for the fire, and I give you this instruction, never depart from the truth. So one of the imports from, or purports from that narration is, even within the Chandogya Upanishad, one is Brahmana not by birth, but by quality. We have so many examples of that, of persons who were like the sons of Rishabhdev, an incarnation of the personality of God at Shaktivesha Avatar. And some of his sons were Brahmanas, and some of his sons were Kshatriyas, and some of them were Mahabhagavatas, beyond the distinction of any caste. Nine sons that became Mahabhagavatas, they're the Navayugendras that appear in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Some became kings, including Bharat Maharaj, and some became first class Brahmanas, as one example, and so many other examples. So not by birth, but by quality. By quality. And how does one get that quality of truthfulness? So, here's some description from Vanaparva Mahabharata, references from the Bhaktisiddhanta gives. From chapter 211, O Brahmana, if a person is born in the family of a Shudra and possesses good qualities, he becomes a Vaishya or a Kshatriya. And if he possesses the quality of simplicity and truthfulness, he is a Brahmana. And later, chapter 215, the Brahmana told the pious hunter, "In my opinion, although your birth is that of a hunter, you are a Brahmana. There's no doubt about it. After all, a Brahmana who is proud and engaged in various sinful activities that result in his falling down into the degradation of being contaminated by impure karma is equal to a Shudra. And I consider that a Shudra who is self-controlled, these are qualities, truthful, and always enthusiastic about executing his religious duties to be a Brahmana. Indeed, the only criterion for being a Brahmana is to possess pure characteristics." There's other quotes. There's like a very long one from another Upanishad where it analyzes who is a Brahmana. Is it the soul? Is it the body? Is it their activity? Is it this? Is it that? It rules them out. And then narrows it down to what it is. And what it is one who has these characteristics. The qualities of a Brahmana is a Brahmana. So that's subtle. What's these qualities we find in, we mentioned this the other day, on Friday, for a Vaishnava, the qualities of a Vaishnava become decorations given by Krishna upon the person who is fixed upon the personality of Godhead, or Krishna Eka Sharana. And Krishna decorates that individual with good qualities. In a society that in Texas, in our modern society, not even, you know, all over the world, the standards of virtue, just as the Bhagavatam describes, we see it happening. Those of you that are from India and haven't been there in a while, and go back and see what's happening. It's shocking, huh? Shocking. I get, whew. I may have mentioned this here, but I'll just quickly mention it. I went to Tirupati past time, going to India. Actually, it was two times ago that I went by plane to Chennai, and I took the train to Tirupati. And when I entered Chennai, I had been a long time since I'd been to Chennai. And I just, my impression from previous visits is this is a place of tradition and religious principle. It's South India where, you know, the invasion didn't come and principles were still intact. Strong tradition. When I went to Chennai this time, it was shocking. Like, the way people were dressed, I thought I was in Bombay. And billboards everywhere. And not just like, you know, on the highway, but downtown where it's, instead of the side of a building, it's a billboard as big as a building with half-dressed women advertising anything. Toothpaste, shoes, you know, a car. And everywhere, you know, in your face, it's like, you know, a Jamila, downtown Chennai. What's going on? You know, because I have been doing some study on spiritual economics. I said, you know, these people are just seeing this is just a number of consumers. These are consumer units that they're trying to draw into the whole program of the economy's booming and consume. Get our product in such a vulgar way. Vulgarity in your face in downtown Chennai. My God. Let me out of here. I'm going to Tirupati. So I got on the train to Tirupati, and it was one of those chair cars. You know, not the compartment type, but, you know, it's open. And what I saw in the chair cars was, you know, people on pilgrimage to Tirupati, where the young people were carrying on like, you know, there was nobody around, and they were just their the way that they were dressed and the way that they were speaking, conducting themselves, and carrying on like, my God. And they're on pilgrimage to Tirupati. What's going on? Let me out of this world. And it just, it goes on and on. It's, you know, it's, Kali Yuga is rapidly advancing. It's not just, you know, it's tough here in America. It's all over the place. I could go on, but you have your experiences. It's shocking. Put on the brakes. Stop. But you can't stop. It's accelerating. So, the Bhagavatam wants to provide us with the, you know, eject button. You know, how to get out of this deteriorating situation of the age of Kali. For persons who are sincere and serious, not just, you know, to get out, but to connect with what our real purpose is. And the atmosphere is surcharged with opposition in the language of Bhagavatam. No, we're going, trying to swim upstream against the Ganges during rainy season. It's going downstream. And you may be an expert swimmer, but as fast as you're swimming upstream, you're actually going downstream because the current is so fast. Without shelter, you'll be downstream before you can count to three. You're way downstream. Very dangerous. Very dangerous. You need shelter. And that shelter, so the sincere person is seeking shelter. And it's not shelter in, you know, some clumps of straw that are floating down the stream. It has to be real, tangible shelter. And the lotus feet of the personality of God, it is that shelter. And once sincerely strive, like Gajendra, sincerely striving for that shelter, because you really mean it, because you see the dangerous circumstance. You want the real thing. Then the connection is made. Krishna reciprocates. It's not our effort alone, but Krishna's seeing our sustained, like Mother Jasoda trying to bind Krishna. It's not the first time she tried to bind Krishna. It was okay. She tried and tried and tried and tried and tried. She was not able to bind Krishna. She's Mother Jasoda. And who are we? We're like little people. There she is, Mother Jasoda, trying to bind Krishna. It's not happening. But because of her purity of devotion, her sincerity, in this case in Brahma, is avyalika vrata, fixed determination to get the real shelter, non-deceptive penance. Not some other thing, but one thing. The shelter of the lotus feet of the Personality of Godhead, and nothing other than that will do. Because like the kirtan we just had, it's, you know, besides musically it was very nice, he has a very nice voice and it's pleasing. But our objective, and nice care kirtan or nice japa or nice consciousness is to be eager to receive Krishna and Krishna's direct association. We're just reading about King Kulashekar today, and he was on such a platform of bhakti that when he was hearing about daily, because he was a Ram Bhakta, he was hearing the pastimes of Ramchandra, and that Sita was abducted by Ravan. He stood up in the middle of the court and said, "We cannot stand for this. We must go find Sita and rescue Sita. Get all my army." He went charging off to get Sita. So he went all the way to Setu Bandha, and the army was not knowing what to do. It looks like the king has lost it. He's charging with his sword, going into the river, or into the ocean. "I'll go alone. I will bring Sita back." And he's carrying the sword over his head. And he's out, up to his neck, out into the water, and soldiers are wondering, what are we going to do? The ministers, or what happened to our king? And because he was so sincere, Ram and Lakshman and Sita came to him and said, "It's okay. The battle is won. Ravana has been killed. Sita has regained. Everything is now okay." But here he is out in the middle of, over his head with a sword up in the air. So Ram personally picked him up and placed him on the shore in safety, because he was so absorbed in the message of Ram's Leela. A similar description is found in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Ram Das Vipra had invited Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to come to his home and have lunch. So Mahaprabhu went and had lunch, or took his bath, and came back and saw that he hadn't even started cooking. So he asked the Brahmana, "My dear sir, you invited me for lunch and nothing has been prepared. What is your intention?" And in a very solemn mood, he said, "Lakshman has gone to the forest to gather vegetables, but he hasn't come back yet. As soon as he comes, I'll immediately begin cooking." And Mahaprabhu could understand this was his meditation. He was deeply absorbed in that mood of serving Ram. Anyway, so the activities that we engage in devotional service have all of Krishna's potencies. Nitya Sarva Shaktis, the chanting of the holy name, has all of Krishna's potencies sufficiently to carry us to Krishna. I mean, Krishna is non-different than his name. And all the activities of devotional service, the Prabhupada described, the Srimad Bhagavatam is literally non-different than Krishna. So that's nice. So when we read Srimad Bhagavatam, it should be with that, the nirvyalika, this place where we're actually gradually realize Krishna through the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. Will come when we're sincerely wanting that shelter of Krishna. Prabhupada describes this in one purport at the end of chapter 3 of the first canto, of seeing Krishna in every page of Srimad Bhagavatam. It's when our habits are eating, sleeping, mating, and defending become pure, when our, just, you know, that what we do every day becomes pure. But in this age of Kali, Prabhupada comments, everything is contaminated. What's pure? Find something pure. Pure air, like even the elements. Pure water. Pure earth. Everything's contaminated. The whole age is, it's, so, altar of that which is pure, that's Krishna. In this age that's filled with contamination. So it can't be the other things, it has to be Krishna. And sincerely wanting that. When that sincerity is joined with the process of Shuddha Bhakti, when we chant the holy name with a sincere desire to receive the holy name, the pure holy name, here's, then we can make that connection. Bhaktisiddhanta, in another place altogether, described the chanting of the holy name is not merely a matter of making some sound. He said you can make a machine that makes the sound. Now they have so many machines that make so many sounds, you know, simulated voices. Or you can train a bird to make the sound. But that's not chanting. But when from the heart you're calling Lord Nityananda, Lord Nityananda, you're so merciful, please deliver the pure holy name to me. And when that pure holy name touches the heart, and then one calls the name, that's the name. This is self-honesty in a spiritual sense, is wanting something that's real and genuine. Otherwise, we're going to get something that's not. And this world is filled with so many things that are not. Life is filled with so many things that are not. And we're far from that position. But if the teaching of Rupa Goswami, which is the teaching of Lord Chaitanya, which is the teaching of Srimad Bhagavatam, is if we aspire for that, however long it takes, like Lord Brahma's 100 celestial years, but however long it takes, if that can become our singular focus, then all of our misconceptions, the verse is saying, all of our misconceptions can be eradicated. So, and we'll see Krishna. The goal is reached. And in seeing Krishna, great happiness, ecstasy, the natural condition of the soul is fully awakened. So our association of devotees, our Sangha of Vaishnavas, is meant to assist one another in achieving that. The medium of that assistance is our loving relationships with one another, our service unto one another. Although we ourselves are weak and imperfect and limited. But again, it's the operative principle is the sincere desire to serve. To serve another, whether it's in a relationship of a marriage or a relationship of a friend or a relationship of a fellow congregant or a Bhakti Vriksha member or whatever it is. Our objective is to serve the other devotee and thereby help purify ourselves to together reach Krishna. I'll give one more example of this. This is something that I received from Shivaram Maharaj. He has a very interesting way of... He likes Rupa Goswami's teachings very much, as many of us do. So what he decided to do was to try to explain Rupa Goswami's teachings on the science of rasa to ordinary people, like people that don't know anything about Rupa Goswami and his teachings. So he put together a little PowerPoint presentation, which I received from him and embellished it and have been traveling about in colleges during this semester. I guess it's the fall semester. And presenting on the topic of relationships because it's a buzz on campuses. What's the term that they use now? Social action. Something like that. Social activism. And bonding is another buzz. And, you know, people in advertisement, relationships, a big thing. I get these things in the mail that says, you know, bank with us where relationship is everything. Marketing. Because people are into relationships, so bank with us because we can make a nice relationship with you. Relationships is everything. Anyway, so it's out there in the area of concern of people. So I'll just do this very quick. I'll try to do it very quickly. There's a give us a very simple definition of what a relationship is, and it's an exchange between two beings where there's something that's mutually valued or shared. So build that description and get to the point where and describe there's different types of exchange: neutrality, friendship, servitorship, friendship, parental and conjugal relationship. And then there's pure and there's impure. And the very simple definition is impure is when one party doesn't understand the other party. They have a misconception about the other party, the other individual. Using Rupa Goswami's language, the subject and the object, or ashraya and vishaya. If you don't understand the other person, then how you can have a relationship that's anything other than disturbed or dissonant, if not dysfunctional? So you need to understand the other person as a spirit soul, and the relationship is spirit soul to spirit soul. Otherwise you have problems in the relationship. Guaranteed. So people have problems in their relationships because they have a misconception of the other person. Then how do you sustain and support that is when the object is not just the other person, but the object is God. And then you have a situation where the subject is the individual and God is the object, and there's another person over here where they're the subject and God is the object. So your relationship is based upon God as the object. So now we'll put that in the framework of a marriage. And here's the husband, here's the wife, and our relationship is we're serving God. So there's three people in that relationship. And it's conscious. Together we're serving God. That's the purpose of marriage. To assist one another in serving the object of our relationship, of our love, of our affection, of our attention. And when that's there, then you have purity. And when that's absent, you have a misconception. Almost guaranteed. Practically guaranteed. And so then there's disturbances. If not, you know, worse. Application point, this last little segment was we value, everybody wants, in the Krishna book it's written, everybody wants to love and be loved without exception. Everybody wants to love and be loved. But this description is that we're opposing that tendency to love in the wrong place. So we're frustrated. So we're looking for another place. that tendency with God, and that's self-honesty. That's our position of real happiness. So we're embarked. How that applies to us is we're embarked on that process. We need to refine more and more clarity with that is the purpose of everything in our life. And when that becomes accomplished, that's the position of self-honesty. And when there's self-honesty, then that's pure. The connection, there's no static in our relationship with Krishna. Everything becomes illumined. It's like this purport Prabhupada is saying, when the sun is present, then you can see yourself, you can see the world, you can see everything. Everything becomes clear. When that becomes clear, our relationships become pure and clear when that becomes clear. And where our service unto one another is to assist that. Then we can become happy. I've been spending some time with Shyama Sundar since I came to Houston, and I asked him what that illness that he had, or the health problem that he had, how has that impacted him? And made it very clear. You know, not just I got real serious about life and death, but it gave him the opportunity to just focus on hearing, and now the goal of what his life is about and his family is, and everything that he's doing is, the focus is focused. Hopefully in the course of time, more and more focused. And that will have that, as your temple president here in Houston, is going to help all of you to also become more and more and more. If anyone makes advancement, and the whole assembly of Vaishnavas makes advancement towards that goal, it's a service to everyone else. One makes advancement, others will advance by that sangha. It's very powerful agent. Singular focus. And that's what my understanding from reading these descriptions that Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur is giving. It starts on an individual level, but it goes to an extended level through our association of devotees, Vaishnava Sangha. We want that quality of sincerely striving for the goal in each thing that we do. Whether it's having a festival or chanting our rounds or having your home gatherings, or we want that through each of these things, Krishna will be, the object is pleased. Pleasing Krishna is our objective. And that's our real self-interest. It's the position of real self-honesty. It's nice. Very nice. Okay, so any comments on this topic? Shyam Sundar?
Just to ask, can you define that we can understand the meaning of the term simplicity and the crookedness? That's one part. And second part, that I would like to know more of the reason that the Indra-Gamya came, why did he came as that?
Let's do the second one first, because I'm not sure what your question is. Why did Kajendra become an elephant? Mm-hmm. He became an elephant because he was cursed to become an elephant. He was cursed to become an elephant because you're a king and you don't even know how to respect a sage that comes to your home. You're not a king. You're an animal. I curse you. You become an elephant.
So who cursed you?
It was a sage. It was like the opposite of what happened with Maharaj Pariksit. He pondered the king, excuse me, the sage, because the sage was in meditation. In this case, it was the king who was in meditation, and the sage came to his door, and he didn't receive the sage. He was in meditation. First, become an elephant. Dull. Elephant circumstance. Now the first one, simplicity and crookedness. So, simplicity and duplicity. That's the, you know, the duplicitous is, it appears you have one purpose, but actually have another purpose. So, serving Krishna should be for the purpose of serving Krishna, and no other purpose. That's simplicity. So much, like there's a statement, one of my favorite statements in the Bhagavatam is, one sentence, Prabhupada says that anyone who has a simple and grateful heart can easily enter into the kingdom of God. Grateful? What have we received? Not just thank you and then off you go, but it's, you know, grateful heart. And simplicity. Not, okay, now what do I do with this? It's not, there's one purpose. From that source from which we receive things, we serve that source. Because of a grateful heart. So, the Prabhupada said that spiritual life is simple for the simple and difficult for the crooked. It's difficult because in our hearts there's so many other desires. And, you know, we're pushed and pulled, we're torn by those other desires. And the simplicity is very simple. You just serve Krishna. It's one thing. Crooked is deception. And simplicity is no deception. That's very straightforward. And so the teaching is Vaishnava should be straightforward in their ordinary dealings. No, just everyday life. Well, you know, what about people take advantage of you if you're straightforward? You depend on Krishna. Krishna will protect you. Be straightforward. That requires a degree of practical mindedness in today's world, but still, you know, it's doable. Being straightforward. It's a condition of heart, rather than, you know, calculating profit and loss and gain and victory and competition. You know, the world is filled with all of that stuff, and our business is just to please Krishna.
Maharaj, I had another question.
Yeah.
I was reading the Journal of Isolation, a book by Gurgamu Maharaj, and he said that to become free from the three modes of material nature, you have to learn the art dealing with the different level of Krishna. And like for the, when you meet with the senior Vaishnava, you should give them a respect and treat them nicely, render some service to them. And when you meet with the neophyte devotees, then you become compassionate to them. And when you meet with the equal devotees, then you become friendly with them. You know, in our life, Maharaj, we have seen that it's very easy for the senior Vaishnavas when we meet, it's very easy to give them a respect and render some service. And also when we meet with the junior devotees, it's very easy to become compassionate, but it's very, very difficult. It says that to become friendly, that you don't show them that you are better than that other devotees on an equal level. Can you give us some practical hint how to keep that mind frame so we can act in that? Because this is the most difficult thing that we have seen.
I would use a different word than difficult. I would say it's much less common. Maybe it's less common because it's more difficult. And a big part of it has to do with just the culture of competition as opposed to the culture of service. So, for me, a very simple solution is the mode of service. Just serve. And it's like a universal antidote for the competitive spirit. And I've had lots of discussion on this topic with Kahn brothers. It's appreciating the service of another person, who, say, in the case of your example you're giving, a peer. You inquire from them about their service and their well-being in a genuine way. And when you do spend time finding out the service of another individual in a genuine way, it's like, whoa, amazing. But we become so caught up in our own autobiography that we're not appreciating the service of another person. Because it's like blinders. I've got my service. And I can't, peripheral vision. Just what's in front of me is my service. And look out, here I come. But that's not pleasing to Krishna. And it's not the mature stage of the mood of service. The mature stage of mood of service is Krishna is to be pleased. And so here's another person pleasing Krishna. Here's another person pleasing Krishna. So many wonderful devotees pleasing Krishna. And we share our realizations. So that's the antidote. Mood of service, and who is it? Who is the object? Say, expand it to say Guru and Krishna, or Prabhupada and Krishna. So what are the standards by which our spiritual master would be pleased if we're competing with our peers? It's like, look at it from the point of view of a parent, and if the children in the family are quarreling with one another, that's a disturbance for the father. He doesn't like to see that. So why do we do that? Because we're not thinking about the Father, we're thinking about ourselves. The mood of service is you think about the person who's being served. It's not just an activity. It's the consciousness. Who's the object? And marriage problems are like that too. Who's the object? Me. I'm supposed to enjoy. That's, everybody knows I'm supposed to enjoy. The only problem is they don't know I'm supposed to enjoy. But Krishna's supposed to enjoy. Mode of service is the antidote. And appreciation. How this one is serving Krishna. That one's serving Krishna. They have realizations. I was having a discussion just today with a godbrother about an autocratic mentality versus a a more collegial type of mentality, or a team effort kind of a person, where it's not just for the sake of building consensus, but you value the realizations of another person. So you can get a full as far as possible picture, because I'm just one person, and then there's others that also have sincerity in their heart, and they may be seeing it from a different perspective. So let me gather these various perspectives so I can get a broader perspective, a broader picture, and then choose a course of action in my service or make a decision of what is to be done. But it's by valuing the realizations and the gifts that Krishna has endowed another person with. Anything else? Yes.
Like you said, everybody wants to be, everybody wants to love and be loved.
Yes.
Be loved. That is a difficult thing that we can get in this world. So how can we, how is that possible?
I'll take your question and turn it around and say, my experience, this isn't scripture, this is just experience. My experience is most people have not had the experience of a loving relationship. So they're hurting because of that. And if they do come in contact with a loving relationship, they don't know how to relate to it. Like, they try to disappear or, run away or something. They don't know how to behave. They don't know how do you deal with this? And it's painful to be in that position, but that's often the case. So it takes a very patient individual to continue to extend a loving, caring mood towards another person, sustained over a period of time, unconditionally, so that in course of time that other person, feels at least there's some trust I can extend to this other individual. And by the example that's set for them, take little baby steps to reciprocate. So the bigger problem is we can't really love another till we receive love.
Krishna, we understand Krishna loves everyone.
Yeah.
But how is it possible?
Well, you're asking these, gigantic questions here. We can perceive it through unlimited ways, every day, every moment kinds of events. But largely the instruction that we can most likely receive is through great souls who are very closely connected to Krishna, and they can help us get the eyes to see those things. The one who has the eyes to see those things can see them at every moment, at every breath. Yeah, so our process is through that relationship with the representatives of Krishna. Those are closely, intimately connected with Krishna, and get a sense of the loving relationship that can exist with those individuals, and then gradually expand, broaden our horizon. The concentric circles can go out to the point where we can see that in everything of life. That's the Mahabhagavata personality. You can see that in every feature of life.
Also, Maharaj, I have heard that the politic about that everyone wants to get love. But the problem is that if you don't reveal yourself, who you are, and what are your goals or how the other person is going to love you. That's what I heard in the Japa Rishi. This is very, very touching.
Uh-huh. This is the self-honesty thing again, and knowing what goals are. And then being consistent. That self-honesty is you're consistent with that. It's not like a mental thing. It's a from the